Hello, friends, and good afternoon, or good evening, or good morning, depending upon where you are in the world. This is the Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW in Bellevue, Washington, on 1150 AM, just outside Seattle in the United States. The program focuses on out-of-this-world information, including psychic phenomena, UFOs, metaphysics, and predictions for the coming years in Seattle, the United States, and beyond. We are the fastest-growing spiritual and psychic UFO program in the world, with listeners in over 60 countries. And I have been told we also have many listeners off-planet as well in the Galactic Alliance. So whether you're on the Earth or off the planet, welcome to the program. Today's show will be really incredible and a truly out-of-this-world experience. For the entire 2 hours today, we will be having the very fascinating and interesting gentleman named Courtney Brown of the Farsight Institute in Georgia tell us about civilizations on Mars and knowledge which he's gained through remote viewing. Remote viewing, which Courtney will be telling you more about this, is the ability to use one's mind to look into the past, present, and the future to not only this planet, but also other planets as well. It's an incredible ability that he's been doing for decades, and I'm so happily and grateful that he's on my show today. Normally, I schedule guests usually for 1 hour, but with Courtney's information, he has so many interesting things to say that I had to have him on. He's graciously agreed to come on for 2 hours. Before we begin, I'd like to thank the many sponsors of this show, including the Inspired Spiritual and Crystal Shop at 765 Broadway in Tacoma, Brady's Oysters in Westport, Washington, which has wonderful seafood, and the Tokelin Hotel in Tokelin, Washington, 20 miles south of Aberdeen, Washington, on the beautiful Pacific coast of Washington. I broadcast last Friday's show from the Tokelin Hotel and had the wonderful Teresa Carroll, a local Seattle psychic, on the show, where we met Charlie, a Chinese fellow who'd passed away in 1937, but is still at the hotel in spirit form with his girlfriend, and he's just thanking me now for having him on my show last Friday. And Charlie, I just want to thank you for coming on the show, and we will visit the hotel, the Tokelin Hotel, sometime again in the future. If anyone out there feels like they need a break, I urge you to stay at the Tokelin Hotel. They're right on the Pacific Ocean in beautiful Willapa Harbor, and their phone number, if you'd like to call them, is 360-267-7006. I stayed in room 2 at the hotel. It wasn't haunted. Room 7 is haunted, though, and that's one room unless you want a ghost experience, I'd stay away from that room, but the other rooms are fine. Out of This World Radio is supported entirely donations, and for those who'd like to donate, please go to the donate button at the upper right-hand corner of the program webpage at www.outofthisworld1150.com and just click on it. Even a dollar will help, and I want to thank everyone for their donations and support. I have a new column on my webpage, also called Ask Ted. When you click on the website at www.outofthisworld1150.com, please go to About Us and then to the right side and ask Ted for free spiritual advice or help. We're also looking for sponsors and advertisers for the show. Any advertising on this program will have a not only Seattle audience, but a worldwide audience for your goods and services, as we're heard in over 60 countries around the globe. The purpose of this program is to raise consciousness to make this world a better place, and with everyone's help, I know we can make this planet a far better and far happier place. Before we begin, I'd also like to thank the many sponsors of the show, including my dear friend Carol, who's been designing my website and providing lots of good, wonderful support. My dear friend Ann Nelson, business professor at Walla Walla College, who helped me start the program. My dear friend Michiko Hayashi of the Emoto Peace Project in Tokyo, Japan. My friends in the Galactic Alliance who've been supporting the show, and my aunt angelic and earthly family, as well as my wonderful sound engineer Eric Ryder and my station manager Eric Krema, without whose help and support this program would not be possible. You can always listen to the show live from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. Seattle time at www.1150kknw.com by just clicking on the Listen Live tab. And after the show, you can always listen to the show at www.outofthisworld1150.com and clicking on any one of our guests. You can also follow us on Twitter at Ted Marr, OTW Radio, and on Facebook at Out of This World Radio. Later, we'll probably be taking calls, and the call-in number here at the studio is area code 425-373-5527. And if you're outside the United States, I believe you add 001 to the number. The toll-free number in Western Washington is 1-888-298-5569. And with that, I'd love to get to my guest, Courtney. Hi, Courtney. Welcome to the program.
Ted, I want to thank you very much. It's an interesting show that you have, and I'm glad to be here.
Well, you fit into the my show perfectly because it's called Out of This World, and I think the research you've done is certainly out of this world, Courtney.
Yeah. You know, just to sort of finesse the intro, I don't actually do the remote viewing at the Farsight Institute. We sort of break up, you know, what we do at where we specialize. I'm usually the chief investigator. And I design the projects and assign the targets, or which are the things that the remote viewers are supposed to look at. And the remote viewing has to be done totally blind, so I can't both remote view and design the targets and the projects at the same time.
Sure.
So then we assign these targets under totally blind conditions to the remote viewers, which are the best on the planet, military grade plus remote viewers, and they're, you know, I will explain more about that in the past, but I just in the show, but I just wanted to clarify that I'm not the remote viewer at the Farsight Institute. I'm the investigator.
Okay.
I can do remote viewing. I know how to do it, but you know, everyone has to have a job.
Of course. And I want to tell my many listeners as well, if they go to your web page at www.courtneybrown.com, that's CourtneyBrown.com. You've done some fascinating work, including work on remote viewing Sedona and Mars, remote viewing 9/11, the Great Pyramid of Giza, Atlantis, and you also have a section on parallel or multiple universes. I know there's a lot to talk about. We'll be focusing in on Mars today, but if there's time, we might get into other areas. I know you haven't prepared for that, but I don't want to spring.
No, I'm always prepared. Okay. The issue is that I am the director of the Farsight Institute, and that's a nonprofit. And so the webpage that you gave out is my personal website, which has all the information about me and what I do.
Mm-hmm.
But the institute where I'm the director of it, is that's www.farsight, FARSIGHT.org, because we're a nonprofit. So it's like seeing far, farsight.org. And that's where you get all of the, you know, the data, all the core information about all these projects that you're talking about.
Sure.
The CourtneyBrown.com website is basically to let people know who I am, what I do, and things like that. But the Farsight Institute's website is where all the content actually is.
Fascinating. I'm sure you've heard of him as Andrew Basagio, I think his name is. He's an attorney in Washington State. He claims many years ago that he actually went to Mars, visited Mars, and then came back. I've asked him to be on my program. I'm waiting to hear from him. But I'm sure you have lots of interesting things to say. And first off, though, Courtney, how did you ever get interested in this kind of field?
Well, the military program was officially closed down. The original military program was officially closed down in the mid-90s. And that's when I heard about it, and I pursued it. I wanted training in it, and I wanted to know it, and I wanted to know all about it. And I wrote two books on my experiences that dealt with extraterrestrial life, and they were bestsellers in their day, and they are still available as free PDF downloads that you can get. Now, this is from my personal website, not from Farsight Institute's website. So this is going back to the CourtneyBrown.com website. And if you click on the nav bar where it says speculative nonfiction, you will see the two books, Cosmic Voyage and Cosmic Explorers. Cosmic Explorers was a sequel to Cosmic Voyage, which was the first book, which started it all. And that was my own personal use of remote viewing to explore extraterrestrial targets, topics. And I still think those books are going to be about 95% accurate. When all is said and done. But, you know, so that's where I, that's basically where I started. And then I started up the Farsight Institute to enable to have a sort of a scientific platform. And to this day, you know, where other people could participate and that are using the military or military-derived methodologies for remote viewing. And to this day, this is, the Farsight Institute is not only the best and the biggest, but it's the only, that's why it's the best and the biggest, it is the only major venue where you can see these full-blown scientific studies using remote viewing as it was done and developed by procedures that were used and developed by the U.S. military and used for espionage purposes, or procedures that are derivative of those methodologies. Now, while the official program was closed in November of 1995 in the DIA, they also had an unofficial movement, again, within the Army, but this was within Special Forces, and that later became known as the 1st Earth Battalion, and that was featured in the movie Men Who Stare at Goats, starring Jeff Bridges and George Clooney. And mm-hmm. So, you know, it's the military has had a long history and interest in it. Now, although I can't, you have to consider this hearsay because I can't bring people up here to say it, so it's just hearsay, but I know for sure that the military program now is much, much bigger than it was back in the mid-1990s. And they had to close it down because it was, once it became public, it was a spectacle. And so to cover themselves, they said they closed it down. But if the current program ever becomes public, they'll close that one down too and start up another one immediately. And
sure.
And say, I don't know how that ever happened. It was must have been a rogue general that did that one, slipped through the cracks. Mm-hmm. So anyway, the military's use of remote viewing is extensive and very keen, even though back in the 1990s they didn't know how it could work because it seemed to violate the laws of physics. It does violate the traditionally understood laws of physics, both quantum mechanical and relativistic physics. But you have to understand, Ted, the laws of physics that you're taught at the university, the basic fundamental paradigms within those laws are quantum mechanical and relativistic. And those date back, without any change whatsoever, 100 years. So you're talking physics that's 100 years old being taught at the universities worldwide. And that's just really stupid. You know it's got to be wrong because nothing lasts 100 years in science. Mm-hmm. Now, the details have changed. As you know, I'm a mathematician. I teach in a social science program at a major university. I do not do any remote viewing research at the university, but... Mm-hmm. Nonetheless, I do appreciate the math of both relativity and quantum mechanics because I am a mathematician, and the math has gotten a lot better. A lot of new things have been done. Technology is better. We have merged the so-called Copenhagen interpretation with relativity with regard to quantum mechanics, so we have a standard model. And we also have quantum computing technology is using quantum mechanical stuff. But the fundamentals, which is the interpretation of quantum mechanics into that allows a macro interpretation, which is you and me, our cars, houses, planets, things like that, that has not budged for over 100 years. That's changing slowly. The major leap forward occurred in 1957 with Hugh Everett, who did his doctorate in physics under John Wheeler at Princeton. And now it's approximately 18% of mainstream physicists have adopted his understanding, which is called the other worlds interpretation of quantum mechanics, which does allow for macro interpretations that correspond with what happens with remote viewing. And that means that it's a generational thing. That means 82% of the physicists are still stuck 100 years into a 100-year-old paradigm, and we're waiting for them to retire and die off, to be quite honest.
Interesting.
And then when the generational shift occurs, you will eventually have, you know, it taught in a major way in mainstream physics classes.
I'd like to share this with you. This sometimes happens on my show. I don't have any control over it, but I'm a psychic, and I've been in touch with the other side for over the last 21 years, and I've been very fortunate in getting in contact with them. There's someone here who'd like to come in and talk to you, give you some messages. Is it all right if I bring him on board?
Sure. This will be a first for me. It's an interesting experience. I love it.
Well, you mentioned quantum mechanics, and his name's Professor Albert Einstein. He doesn't like to be called Einstein. He likes to be rather called Professor Einstein. So he's here now. I've spoken to him probably four or five times in the last month, And he's saying that you're right on track, and the other gentleman, you mentioned the other world's interpretation of quantum mechanics, that gentleman, he said, is right on track. And he'd also like to help you with your research as well at some point. And he's saying if you want to get in touch with him, to quietly meditate early in the morning, and he will come to you. He's here now, actually. And
You can let him speak if you want. It's up to you. I don't know what you do in these situations.
Yeah, right?
You report what they say?
I'm kind of like the telephone, kind of in a way.
Oh, okay, that's fine. That's fine.
I'm a telephone. I'm just the messenger, so I just relay the messages. But he is here, and he's very proud of your work. Yeah, he said quantum mechanics is relatively, are both limited. Since he passed over to the other side, he's continued his research, and he said that he can. Once you go over to the fifth dimension, we're in the third dimension here. Fourth dimension is time. The fifth dimension, where Professor Einstein is currently he's gained access to universal truth, where everything is true, and universal knowledge. So he's been able to not only continue his research on that other side, but also link up with some more friends of his, including Leonardo da Vinci, he just came in too. He's here too. But he wants to encourage you in your work, and he said that you're on track to make some great discoveries, he said. So
it's interesting. Well, you can tell him thank you.
He says you're welcome. You're welcome. And anytime you'd like to, you can either meditate on your own, he said, or just call me, Ted. It's fine, anytime you like, and we'll stay in touch. And we have another radio show. I'm having you on April 20th, actually, from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. Seattle time, on Uncommon Awareness, Dr. Lorraine's Hurley Show. And that show will be broadcast. The website is www.drhurley.net. He's here now, and we can any questions you can ask now or later, he's open to it. So,
well, you know, I do meditate every day, about 2.5 hours. People sometimes wonder how someone can meditate a couple hours, 2.5 hours a day, and mm-hmm. be productive. But most of the time people spend doing things, it's useless. It's spinning the wheels. They don't actually get much done, and a lot of fretting it happens. Mm-hmm. And so what the meditation does is it calms the mind. I do the TM Cities program, the Transcendental Meditation Advanced program, which is called the Cities. And it calms the mind, and all the stress goes away. Mm-hmm. And when the stress goes away, you think clearly about what needs to be done. And then you do what needs to be done, the focus mm-hmm. on what needs to be done. So you end up being tremendously productive, and those people who don't meditate actually end up being tremendously unproductive because mm-hmm. the mind is just spinning. It's like a Jeep that's in the sand, that's stuck in the sand, spinning its wheels. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of fury going on, a lot of moving of the engine, a lot of grinding, but the Jeep's not going anyplace.
Oh no! Oh my goodness! Oh my goodness!
Yeah, but meditation actually helps. I get a lot of good information when I meditate. In fact, a lot of times I've solved problems. I remember back in the old days when I was trying to understand Fourier analysis. A lot of books, mathematic books, are written just awfully. I mean, you're talking capital A awfully.
Mm-hmm.
And you just can't sort them out. You just can't figure out what's going on. And some mathematicians, some people can, but the fact that only certain sort of personality types can sort of figure out what goes on, that's not a good thing, because there's nothing complicated in math at all that should be difficult to understand.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's explained easily, if it's explained properly, Einstein's relativity theory can be explained without any serious issues whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
Even the technical aspects of it. And so, you know, the question is, how do you get it so you can understand something when the books that are available to you are intractable?
Mm-hmm.
And so there have been some times, and I remember four-year analysis was one of those times, where I just couldn't figure out what the books... I had so many books, they were all stacked up. Mm-hmm. Couldn't figure out how to... Because I had to write a program where you actually programmed in the four-year analysis for a particular problem I was dealing with in complex systems. Mm-hmm. And when you have to program something, you have to understand it completely, because you've literally got to put every little thing in the program that does it. So you have to know exactly what is being done. Mm-hmm. There is no sort of vague ambiguity when you have to program something. Mm-hmm. And so there have been times when I remember there was this one time where I just couldn't figure it out. Then I just decided to meditate, and I just did my afternoon meditation, and a couple hours later it was perfectly clear.
Wonderful.
And a couple times I've actually gone to the point of saying I was going to write a book, and I've written a few textbooks on things that were really the urge for doing that was simply because it took me so long to understand what other people were writing about in their books.
Sure.
I just wanted a book that would have explained it simply the way I would have wanted it to be explained. In fact, talking about Einstein, there is a medical doctor who had a bachelor's in physics, a big university, mm-hmm. and he just loved physics, but he wanted to be a doctor, so he went and became a medical doctor. Well, after he became a medical doctor, he was really ticked off at how Einstein's relativity theory, both special and general, were taught. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was like very dense. I mean, it was like line after line. And if you talk to these mathematicians, they're not understanding what's being said here. The explanations you would typically get are not any better than the stuff that was intractable in the book. Mm-hmm. And so they really have a communication issue. Anyway, this guy was really ticked off. Mm-hmm. And so he wrote a book as a medical doctor of Einstein's relativity theory. That's both the special, and which deals with time, and then the general, which deals with gravity. And he did it amazingly well. I mean, he did it. He even avoided tensor calculus and the general relativity theory, which was seemingly impossible. Mm-hmm. And you know, he really did an unbelievably good job. So, and he had the same type of attitude. He said, "There is no reason this stuff shouldn't be explained to people so they can understand it," because he loved it. So sure. the more you love mathematics, it's like poetry. Mm-hmm. The more you want other people to love it as well. Mm-hmm. And then the idea of making it confusing so people can't get at it is like making a poem confusing so no one can read it and understand it. You want people to do it. Mm-hmm. That's sort of the origin of rap music, because poetry really wasn't happening at that time when rap music came out. But it was discovered that poetry embraced with percussion and sound sold. I mean, people wanted to hear it. So we have a whole generation of new poets that call themselves rap artists, and a huge audience of poetry under the gaze of popular music, rap. But the reality was that how you wrap something up, and I'm not talking about rap music. I mean, how you wrap it, like WRAP, how you wrap it up makes a big deal of difference for its popular consumption. And so the marketing of certain things, especially ideas, is as important as the creation of the ideas themselves. What good is a great idea if it's so confusingly packaged that nobody watches it, or nobody reads it, nobody listens to it?
That's true. I mean, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But that brings us to remote viewing, because one of the things that really was an enigma was why the military program was kept under wraps so much, and then when it came out, it was buried in the New Age community, and they wanted it to stay in the New Age bookstore community, and they wanted it not to get out. So it was really not. It was not. There was a couple things sort of weird with it. It was done with paper and pen, and that's dreadfully boring to watch. But that was typical for the 1990s and earlier. That was the technology of the day. And secondly, they really didn't have a plan or desire to get it into the mainstream. So the whole idea was to keep it away. You see, there's a political issue with remote viewing, because once it becomes well acknowledged that remote viewing is possible, then you're talking about any teenage kid being able to read the mind of the president. So, I mean, and it's, you can...
Or his girlfriend, either way.
Or his girlfriend. Yeah, so your eyes can roll when they hear things like that. But the reality is, things like that can be done.
Well,
so the issue is secrecy. We govern ourselves by secrecy. And the public acknowledgement, the mainstream acknowledgement that remote viewing is real, essentially cracks the wall in the idea that we have to govern ourselves through secrecy. It means we're talking about a potential openness that means governing in the absence of secrecy. And that is very scary to a lot of people who are used to a certain pattern of thought, a secrecy pattern of thought. It means rearranging everything that we do in terms of living without secrets. And that's really a big hump. That's the main reason the mainstream has been kept out of acknowledging remote viewing as a real phenomenon.
Well, one of the things I wanted to tell you was that Nostradamus made a prediction back in the 16th century, Courtney, that by the 2020s and 2030s, that humanity would embark upon a golden age of spiritual peace and prosperity, which would last for 1,000 years, after which we would become a spacefaring species throughout the universe. And one of the things that he said that psychic abilities like remote viewing, telepathy, seeing orders would become commonplace by the 2020s and especially the 2030s.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's also obvious that it will eventually be technologically enhanced. So once we know more about it as a real phenomenon, then there'll be people with big grant budgets, technology oriented, will be figuring out, how to make devices that do the same thing.
Several more people have come in the last couple of minutes, and my studio here is completely lit up in white light. I don't know what your studio looks like, but this is definitely white light around me here. It's really beautiful. Outside, it's rather a cloudy day here in Seattle. It's beautiful, but it's cloudy. But in here, we have a lot more light in the studio here. It's beautiful. We have a couple more people, entities, who've come in. I'd like to introduce themselves. The first one is Ambassador Trellian of the Galactic Alliance. They are an alliance of 435 million planets of approximately 7 trillion entities. I'm in frequent telepathic communication, and he's just come in now. He wanted to give you some messages about Mars. It's a very old planet. It actually was inhabited, much like Earth is inhabited here at one point many millennia ago, but it was destroyed through conflict. And there is life on the planet now, but what the lesson for us here on this planet, planet Earth, is that unless we're careful, conflict, I don't see this conflict happening. I don't see us destroying ourselves through conflict, but if we make wrong choices, conflict could destroy this planet Earth like Mars was destroyed so many millennia ago. The face on Mars is actually, they're saying it's an Orion King. A humanoid Orion King that was put there so many millennia ago. And this was before the Orions were taken over. They were taken over by the reptilian many hundreds of thousands of years ago, and they were enslaved into a species, which where we have the Greys today. The Greys are from the Orions, Orion constellation. But these particular Greys that visit this Earth now are genetically modified by the reptilians to serve them in a very negative way. But this statue, this face on Mars, he's saying, Ambassador Twellian is saying, is this was before that they were actually captured. They were out visiting the different planets. But I know you have a lot to say about Mars. I just wanted to share that with you, that he is here and he gives his regards to you.
Sure, that's great. Well, if you want, we can start with the Cydonia stuff.
Wonderful, wonderful. And before we do, I just want to make a quick station announcement that for those who are just tuning in, this is Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW here in Bellevue, Washington, just outside Seattle on 1150 AM. We're having a fascinating discussion today with Courtney Brown, a wonderful remote viewer who's done a lot of wonderful research in the area, and we're talking about Mars. We also have psychically, Professor Albert Einstein and Ambassador Trellian of the Galactic Alliance is with us as well. And there will be more people coming in, I'm told, now later in the program. But please, Courtney, go right ahead.
Well, one of the things that is useful in particular about remote viewing is that it accesses or utilizes a natural ability that is, of course, what you talk about a lot on your show, which is mm-hmm. psychic ability. Mm-hmm. But it does so in a way that is highly structured. And that allows people that are, you know, scientists, government people, intelligence people, to get the data in ways that make sense to them. And it allows for multiple remote viewers that have, say, in military intelligence circles, security clearances mm-hmm. to work and get corroborative data, meaning they work independently and get corroborative data. The other thing about remote viewing that is different from the natural abilities, psychic abilities and so on, is it's totally always done blind, and it cannot be done front-loaded. Mm-hmm. So, for example, you can be talking to someone and get an intuitive pulse and say to them as a natural psychic, I'm feeling such and such about you. Mm-hmm. You know, you can be talking about, like you've done in the show, somebody that wants to leave a message or whatever. In remote viewing, that can't be done. So the reason it can't be done is that the level of accuracy that's required with remote viewing is such that the mind's mental imagination and memory have to be held in check. So if the memory and imagination are not held in check with the remote viewers, the experience is that it's impossible to control it, and that the memory and the imagination will overwhelm the remote viewers, and it will make it sound and feel just like the real stuff. Mm-hmm. So they'll think they're remote viewing, but in fact they're not remote viewing. So you can't tell a remote viewer, tell me what's going on with the Eiffel Tower right now.
Okay.
They couldn't do it, because then their memory, okay, what day is today? Okay, well, today is the 10th of April. Let me see. It's probably that warm in Eiffel Tower. Okay, well, I can sort of see it's probably a sunny day. And then so the memory and imagination sort of nest to the Eiffel Tower. Okay, now let me try to figure out. And by that time, it's totally lost, because the conscious mind has just taken over.
Sure.
And it's impossible for these remote viewers to get past that, because the data feel exactly like the real McCoy. Mm-hmm. So the only way it works is if they're told with a non-leading email. They can't even have a conversation with me on the phone or see me face to face. A non-leading email saying there is a target mm-hmm. and a project associated with it. Do your session, send it in. End of story, goodbye. And I get it later. And this is really important, because when we have multiple remote viewers working at the Farsight Institute on a project like this new one on Cydonia Mars, mm-hmm. one of the things we want to say is, first we want to know that we do know some things about the so-called face on Mars in the Cydonia region. We have really good high-resolution NASA and its partners photos of the face. It's a barren terrain. It looks like a mountain. It's got some linear elements to it. We know a lot about what's in the... We can see the picture. Mm-hmm. And so when we get the remote viewing back, we want to make sure that the data for those elements, which we call verifiable, because we know they're true and we can see them in the picture, that those are accurate. Mm-hmm. And we don't see extraneous stuff that's impossible mm-hmm. in there. For example, let's go back to the Eiffel Tower. Mm-hmm. Let us say that we had the remote viewers remote view the Eiffel Tower. I mean, remote view the face on Mars, and one of them described something that was like a big metal structure pointed at the top like the Eiffel Tower, and it was mm-hmm. just like the Eiffel Tower. Well, we know it's wrong, because it's not in the picture. There is no Eiffel Tower in the middle of the face on Mars. There's nothing like the thing in Paris and the face on Mars. So what we want to do is we want to know that the verifiable elements, which is the stuff we can see in the pictures, is spot on. And so we work with the absolute best remote viewers on the planet. And the two that we have been working with a lot recently are Dick Allgaier, who uses the HRVG method, and that was taught to him by Glenn Wheaton, and he came out of the movement in Special Forces that was featured in the movie Men Who Stare at Goats, again starring Jeff Bridges and George Clooney. And another major viewer that we work with is Daz Smith, and Daz is in Britain, so Dick Allgaier is in Hawaii, and Daz is in Britain, and he uses CRV, or controlled remote viewing, and that is a style of remote viewing that was used in the official program that was housed in the Defense Intelligence Agency, or the DIA. And so we have two different methodologies, two different viewers on opposite ends of the planet. They don't communicate with one another. Mm-hmm. During the data collection process, they don't get any information at all about what the nature of the project is. And when they do their sessions, they're doing them solo, meaning there's nobody in the room mm-hmm. that knows anything about the project. Mm-hmm. So it's a complicated thing, because we have learned that watching remote viewing done on paper and pen is dreadfully boring. So we changed over these recent years to doing everything live on video. So our Cydonia project is another example of video that you can see live, meaning people are doing it right then and there. It's not like they're reporting what they did when they did it. You're actually watching it now. I mean, that's like, and these remote viewers had to learn to become their own sound guys, their own camera guys, set up the green screen boards, set up the whiteboards that they do it, and they do it standing up live on video, and in a theatrically entertaining manner, so mm-hmm. it's fun to watch. Mm-hmm. So that was a big leap for us to get out of the paper and pen mode. And so we've really, you know, moved remote viewing very far in terms of its presentational capabilities. And then we have these videos, and we have a new video on the Cydonia Mars thing. And the thing that, it's 3 hours long, but I've never heard from a single person that there was a minute wasted. And I mean, you're on the edge of your seat, because you know what the target is when you're watching the video, mm-hmm. but you know that the people that are describing it don't know, and you see the accuracy of the verifiable elements so completely correct. Mm-hmm. It's like, how can they be doing that?
Sure.
This is like crazy. It's like, sure. Look at that. They're drawing it exactly.
Yeah, it's amazing. And that's what I saw, too, in your trailer. It's fascinating. Just fascinating.
And mm-hmm. so when you then go beyond that, and then you say, okay, they got the verifiable stuff spot on, what else did they get? That's new data. That stuff becomes very believable, because mm-hmm. the verifiable stuff was exact.
Well,
and the new data is then, you know, extremely informative. And that's not a situation where someone's telling you about something. That's something where you're actually seeing an eyewitness right then and there on the spot.
Well,
you know, reporting back live. So it's a fascinating thing.
Well, I so appreciate you explaining that, Courtney. I want to share this with you, Courtney, and also my many listeners around the world, that I listened to not only Mars, but you've got some fascinating trailers and information on all kinds of other things, including 9/11. And I want to have another show on 9/11 in the future, but one of the things I noticed about your trailer on 9/11 was that your remote viewers had seen a boardroom of people discussing the 9/11 events before they happened, planning them out in a very businesslike, cold fashion, nonchalantly saying that thousands of people would die, and that this entire thing was planned out. And it didn't look like they were any of the so-called perpetrators of the attack itself. They looked like businessmen from the information that you had on your trailer. This is again for another program, but I was thinking that's what I just realized, that when you remote view things and you're having people indicating the same information, that this has an extremely high accuracy for being
when they both report back the verifiable elements exactly the same.
True.
Then everything else becomes extraordinarily believable. And we're not talking about vague details like okay, I think this is on land. We're not talking about that.
Right.
We're talking about spot on exact descriptions of the Twin Towers, Pentagon building, the flying object hitting the buildings, and exact descriptions of everything. And then you say, okay, well, what else did they get? And yeah, the 9/11 thing was a fascinating project, because that will come out one day. The only, you know, we've had the military guys on our board of directors, so, you know, we're We're not an unknown quantity to the military people. But the 9/11 thing was a real game changer for us, because when we realized we were allowed to publish it, that was a big deal for us, because that was very clear we were allowed to publish it, meaning the intelligence community is split right down the middle, meaning half of them, I'm speaking figuratively when I say half, because I don't know the exact percentages,
mm-hmm.
but half of them are really supportive and, you know, made sure we were allowed to publish them, and are really ticked off at what happened with 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
And the other half probably want us killed. So
we're
protected. I mean, we're clearly protected by the half that is really ticked off by what happened with 9/11. But we can do that on another show. That's a very complicated event, but it was not what people were shown in the mainstream media. And there are enormous anomalies in the physical evidence that are totally unexplainable with respect to
the melting.
the main mainstream story that was fed out to people, but right. that perfectly matched the remote viewing data. And right. there's a cottage industry of people and organizations that collect the anomalous physical evidence, which is just impossible to reconcile with the official story of what happened with 9/11.
This reminds me of something. My dad just popped in, and he was from a state called Missouri, which is
the Show Me State.
The Show Me State, right? And he's just telling me now. I'm in touch with him psychically. He's just telling me now. He says you have to get the evidence, of course, before you can jump to any conclusions, and that's what you've done in your fascinating and very very interesting remote viewing. Ambassador Twelling is just telling me now from the Galactic Alliance that this year and for the rest of this decade into the 2020s and 2030s. Is the start of a time of truth for humanity. In other words, things which are half true or lies will fall by the wayside. They'll become self-evident that they are in fact falsehoods. And he's saying that this is true certainly with 9/11, that the truth is coming out about what happened in 9/11, which we'll have on another show. But the truth will come out, and then humanity will experience a wonderful, beautiful transparency that they've never had quite before. That's because many people will pick up a remote viewing, as a matter of fact, be able to read other people's minds and see auras, and that'll become standard commonplace by the 2020s, especially by the 2030s. I had a wonderful psychic named Ray Chandran from Tokyo, Japan, here on my show about a month ago. Ray's in touch with a lot of wonderful spiritual masters, including Mary Magdalene and Jesus, and he was saying that they say that we are entering into a period of transparency, and that's part of your work. And the fact that you've been allowed, quotes around allowed, Courtney, to publish your wonderful work and get the word out there is a good sign. And it's a good sign that
it's actually a very good sign.
Absolutely.
But you know, Ted, there's one of the nice things that I like to do, just sort of for fun.
Mm-hmm.
is to point out physical elements that back up statements of belief,
mm-hmm.
or perception. And one of the things that you said earlier in the show is that you believe our civilization will eventually become a spacefaring civilization.
Correct.
Well, it's an interesting thing that this planet is not a planet that we should be on in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Just think about this. We always think about our loving Earth and how much it's wonderful it is and so on.
Right.
But just understand, it is an 8,000-mile diameter ball of liquid molten rock.
Mm-hmm.
It's covered by an 8-mile thick crust, and we live on the crust.
Mm-hmm.
It's a balloon.
Hmm.
Now, there have been physical studies of anomalistic archaeological data, a couple of them are huge, very well documented,
mm-hmm.
that are absolutely repressed and not reported in the mainstream archaeological courses that you get at the university.
Mm-hmm.
And I have heard archaeologists actually say, oh no, if we talk about anything like that, we will get banned for life. But the reality is, eventually, if nothing else happens, the sun burps. I mean, random things happen. And when the sun burps with a coronal mass ejection in our direction, that's mm-hmm. the end. What happens is that the giant ball of molten lava rock jelly shivers. And when it shivers because of a huge magnetic storm that sort of passes through us, then, you know, the crust wrinkles, and that's the end. Civilization gets, you know, the wrinkling on the crust happens. It's not the illusion that we're sort of on a stable surface. It's just such an illusion. Now, it is okay for a few hundred years, a few thousand years. Mm-hmm. You can go 10, 15,000 years, and it'll be okay, and it'll look fine. Mm-hmm. But eventually, there's going to be a solar burst, and there'll be a ripple in the lake, and the planet will just not be inhabitable the way it was. Now, it doesn't mean that we're all going to die, but it will mean that there'll be no technology left. That when you have a coronal mass ejection that hits us direct, you're talking about nothing electronic being able to work. And you're talking about buildings crumbling and all types of plasma storms coming down on the surface. And so, yeah, a lot of people would die. But more importantly than that, we're basically Stone Age after that, and we have to rebuild again. So this shouldn't happen in any type of a long-term civilization. So what we have is a situation where mainstream anthropology and archaeologically makes the absolutely absurd claim that we popped out of monkeys 200,000 years ago.
I know. It's ridiculous.
And that now we are having a civilization, we were hunter-gatherers until 3,000 years ago.
Right.
And that 3,000 years ago, we built our civilization, and here we are flying jets and airplanes today. Well, you know, it takes hundreds and millions and hundreds and hundreds of millions of years to create an evolutionary shift where you pop a human out of a monkey. You just can't do it in a couple hundred thousand years. It just doesn't work that fast.
Unless.
And now I'm not yeah. arguing against evolution. I'm just saying it's crazy to think right. it can happen in that
right.
speed.
Right.
And in addition, the archaeological evidence that's repressed, and this is very solid archaeological, you know, things that have been dug up, mm-hmm. Clearly indicate that we've had advanced civilizations repeatedly in the past, and they have not survived. So, you know, our destiny, and I think as long as there's not a big solar burp within the next couple hundred years, our destiny is absolutely to leave this planet. This mm-hmm. planet, you need a million years of peace and quiet to develop into a civilization with a destiny. Mm-hmm. You can't live on a lake that's going to have tidal waves on it every few thousand years. You have, it just doesn't work. So our destiny is not long-term on this planet. This planet is perfect for a biological and zoological garden. Mm-hmm. This is a great place to have a botanical and zoological garden. This is what you want. This is the place where you want to have plants and animals. And you want to have them at all types of different variety and do genetic experiments and things like that. You don't want to have people running around here for a long time. Now, again, a few hundred years, no problem. A few thousand years is no problem. But you talk longer spans of time, 20, 30, 40,000 years, it's nuts.
Ambassador Twelling is telling me now that everything was brought here. And he's given me some examples. For example, in the Northwest here, for those in the Seattle area who are listening, we have a beautiful tree called the Madrona tree. It's a very interesting tree, Courtney, because its bark is brown and it's continually peeling. But there's another scientist friend of mine at the University of Washington who emphatically states that its life cycle actually corresponds to that of Mars and not of Earth. It's when it goes into hibernation, when it sheds its leaves, when it sheds its bark, that's all synchronized to the planetary cycles of Mars and not Earth. There's also other people have said, Patricia Corey, a New York Times bestselling author, who's been in contact with the Sirius civilization and the Sirius High Council, states that that whales and dolphins actually came here from Sirius B, were transported here. And so it makes sense that we're from somewhere else, too. The Pleiadians, for example, say that most humans, all humans in this part of the Milky Way galaxy actually came from a planet called Lyra, L-Y-R-A, many millennia ago, and then went out and spread out through the universe. So I think we are here. Everyone here is from somewhere else. And I think you've made a wonderful point, Courtney, about the about the time that it takes to evolve into a human being. You know, I think obviously.
Well, I think I can add a little bit more
sure.
Speculatively to what you were saying earlier in the show also about the so-called Orion stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that a lot of the details that you have may not be correct, but the basic idea is correct.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you think of it, why are we here?
Mm-hmm.
No long-term civilization would come here to start in the first place.
Sure.
This is a very volatile planet. Its weather is really tough. It's got mm-hmm. hurricanes. It's
sure.
very thick. I mean,
right.
it's got lightning storms. The
right.
gravity is heavy. The air right. is thick. The weather is tough.
Right.
And it's a bowl of molten lava.
Mm-hmm.
So if you put all that together, you can sort of say, well, why are we here then? And you have to put two and two together. And this is me leaping. I like to really talk only about what we know with regard to the remote viewing studies.
Mm-hmm.
But this is sort of glaring. The only reason that merely makes sense for us all to be here is that we came here to get away from something else. Meaning there must have been something that was really bad happening elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
That this was a place of refuge. This was a place that nobody was looking at for a while because, mm-hmm. you know, who would want to live here? And this must have been a place where refugees came. And the reason I'm suggesting that that really does sort of make sense is it seems to be that we had a study that we also did called the Great Pyramid of Giza study, where we studied the origin of the Great Pyramid of Giza.
Mm-hmm.
And that study was a real surprise to me because I expected it to be a totally verifiable project, easy piece of cake, huge pile of rocks out in the desert, find out how it was built and stuff. But the results came back that were so surprising. And again, you can find out all about this on our website, farsight.org. And the results came back fascinating that there was a group of extraterrestrials
mm-hmm.
that were controlling the planet essentially like a slave society
mm-hmm.
and they built the pyramids in an attempt to foster a sort of mind control in the sense of fostering a religion to get humans to think about things in a certain way and
right.
And the Great Pyramid of Giza by itself is a useless pile of rocks. So it really was very valuable to them in terms of getting humans oriented towards a sort of new religion type of idea. Mm-hmm. And also, it's not a normal style of architecture. It's a lot of work to put it together.
Right.
And there's not like living space inside it. So mm-hmm. it's not really useful. So what you really get in sort of in combination with it is that this very hostile extraterrestrial group was actually trying to get us in a sense. It seems as if they were trying to get us so tired, so worn out, so religiously tied up
mm-hmm.
that we wouldn't remember where we came from, that our memory, and what happened to it after mm-hmm. near the end of it, mm-hmm. is another extraterrestrial group came in and basically chased off the first one.
What?
Now the first one we don't know where they went, so I'm assuming they're still here, but
right.
sort of like guerrilla warfare type of thing.
Right.
But they weren't able to control the planet overtly like they were before,
right.
and it sort of left us up to our own devices at this mm-hmm. point. And then what happened? You got a normal style of architecture that has lots of rooms in it that you can live in, and that produces skyscrapers, square buildings, rectangular stuff. And nowhere do you ever see a return to the pyramidal type of architecture. So I think our normal way of building things, where we came from, looked like what we have now.
Hmm.
Meaning, if you look at what we're going to be doing is bringing our memories back of what the type of buildings are that we like to build. If you look at where we came from, another star system very far away, I bet you'd feel very much at home. You'd see buildings just like what we see now.
Sure.
You'd have streets.
Sure.
You'd have stuff
sure.
like that. You wouldn't see these pyramids things. And so I get, and this is speculating beyond the data that we have, but the data we do have clearly show two extraterrestrial groups, one sort of malevolent and another one coming in afterwards and basically overpowering and chasing them off. And then sort of freeing us up, and then we sort of evolve into our own stuff. We also did another project before that called the Atlantis Project because we had very clear, we always start with some type of image. So we don't just go off and do anything, but we have very clear pictures.
Courtney, my friend, I'm sorry to interrupt, but we've got to take a break here, a station break here in just a couple of seconds. But please hold that thought regarding Atlantis, and we will talk about Atlantis during our next hour. And please hold on, friends, for the second hour of Out of This World Radio.